but we will hear from Mr. Miller. The next case is R.A.S. against IMI Cornelius Renfor. Mr. Miller.
Thanks. Please, the court, counsel. I have a number of points that I would like to briefly discuss this morning. When the lower court granted Remcor's motion for summary judgment with regard to count three of the plaintiff's complaint, it relied heavily on the case of Ray versus Dynagear, which is cited in the briefs. And so I would very briefly like to make some factual distinctions between that case and this case at bar. There are a number of factual distinctions. I'm only going to mention what I think is really pertinent or significant to the issues here, and that is primarily this. In the Ray case, the plaintiff alleged that he was discharged in retaliation for filing a complaint or a charge with the INS. Section 1324...
Puzzled about why this case is in federal court.
Well, it was a three count complaint. The first two counts were based on were Title VII actions, based on Title VII, 42 U.S.C. 2000.
They alleging to have gone away.
Yes, they went away.
Is it normal under these circumstances to relinquish supplemental jurisdiction so that state courts can decide questions of state law being argued by parties who are not of diverse citizenship?
Well, the first two counts, count one and two of the complaint, were also dismissed pursuant to the granting of a motion for summary judgment. And so, of course, we took the appeal, but we only took the appeal as to count three. We did not take an appeal as to counts one and two.
I'm wondering what indication...
So what?
Sorry.
I mean, I don't understand. The question I'm asking has to do with the district court's approach. Normally, after federal claims are resolved, the court relinquishes supplemental jurisdiction and sends the state claim to state court. Why shouldn't that be done here? Then you could get from the state court a bona fide decision about whether there's a state law claim here.
Well, the court could do that, but the fact is that...
Why shouldn't the court do that?
Well, we think the court shouldn't do that because the basis for the public policy here is found in a federal statute. It's found in Section 1324A, which is the Immigration Reform and Control Act.
But what indication do we have that compliance with that act represents the public policy issue?
Well, we base our argument on three cases. We base our argument on an Illinois Supreme Court case from 1985, the Wheeler case, which is cited in our brief. And that case stands for the proposition that Illinois public policy can be based on violations of a federal statute.
But that was speaking specifically to that and for Gaffney, the health and safety interests.
Well, yes.
So how do you fit yourself into that box?
Well, we believe that what's protected here, that's what is referred to in Section 1324A, is employment rights. And is employment rights. And certainly the employment rights are every bit as important to the health and general welfare of the people of the state of Illinois as some of the other cases where the right to do this was upheld, for example, in Medicare.
But the problem is the Illinois Supreme Court hasn't gone that far, as you suggest we do.
Well, the Illinois Supreme Court has only gone so far.
Or even the lower court cases in Illinois. No Illinois cases have gone that far.
Well, I think that they have gone that far in the sense that they have upheld the right to base public policy on something like Medicare fraud. Those cases are cited. They've gone so far as to base it on income tax fraud, and I think saying that those are rights that affect the people of the state of Illinois in general, the general welfare of the people of the state. I think certainly full employment, lawful employment, authorized employment, with its attendant benefits, such as Medicare payments that come with full employment, such as income tax that comes with full employment, benefits all the people in the state.
But even if we gave you that, doesn't the evidence reveal that she was fired for legitimate performance-related reasons?
Well, two answers. Number one, that was not part of the court's decision in any way in granting the motion for summary judgment as to count three. Nonetheless, my second answer, I will address that. We believe that there is a genuine issue of material fact. We think there's a very serious issue here. For example, there are two things that are very important with regard to the issue of performance. Number one, she had a performance review, according to the facts, in January of 1999. At that performance review, she was found to be good. She wasn't marked poor in any area and was good in 18 of 22 categories. And pursuant to that review, she got an increase in her pay and everything was fine. Then in May of 1999, the opposite happened. She got a performance review that was not so good. So the question is, what happened in between January of 1999, the first performance review, and May of 1999, the second performance review? And what happened is set forth in the statement of facts. It's set forth in the brief. The letter came from the Social Security Administration saying that there were many invalid Social Security numbers. And so Aries believed that to be a violation of Section 1324A and terminated employees. She was told not to terminate them because we need these people for production, and she continued to terminate them, and she was discharged. And so we believe that there's a logical explanation for her good review in January of 1999 and her poor review 2 months after her actions with regard to the Social Security numbers in May 1999. I hope I've answered the question with regard to performance. I see that I'm into my rebuttal time. I would like to just take a minute of it to raise one other issue. The REMCOR has stated in its brief that we have waived the issue of whether or not 1324B5 applies, and my response to that, of course, is that Section 1324A and B have been the underlying common thread throughout this entire case. It's not like they were taken by surprise. They cite the Mosher case for the proposition that you can't raise an affirmative defense for the first time in the appellate court, and that's true. I agree with that. But this has not been raised for the first time here. This section, 1324A, was even referred to in the order of the lower court granting the motion for summary judgment. So it's been involved in the entire case. I would like to reserve a couple of minutes for rebuttal. Thank you.
Certainly, Counselor. Ms. Rich.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Allegra Rich. I represent REMCOR in this matter. Your Honors, this court can affirm the dismissal of Ms. Aries' retaliatory discharge claim on any ground supported by the record that was submitted to the district court. Here, we argue that there are three such grounds. First, Section 1324B of the Immigration Reform and Control Act contains an anti-retaliation provision that was a remedy for Ms. Aries if she believed that she was being retaliated against for upholding her interpretation of the act. She chose not to comply with the administrative prerequisites of that section. She did not avail herself of that remedy, and she cannot now come before this court and asked the court to fashion a brand new tort out of Illinois law to circumvent her failure to avail herself of the statute's anti-retaliation provision. Second, there is no clear mandate of Illinois public policy present in this case, and that is a requirement in order to have a tort of retaliatory discharge under Illinois law. And as Judge Williams pointed out, there is no health and safety issue at play here. So it simply does not fall within the type of cases that courts recognize for this tort. Third, even if the court were to decide that this is a new Illinois public policy or were to decline to decide the issue, summary judgment is still appropriate because Ms. Airy simply has not put forth any evidence that anything other than her poor job performance motivated REMCOR's decision to terminate her employment. With respect to Section 1324B, the only two courts to address this question in Illinois, which is the Rye case that Mr. Miller referred to and the district court decision below, have found that the anti-retaliation provision contained in that section provides a remedy for employees who believe that they are being subjected to an adverse employment action based on upholding these immigration laws. And there are no cases to the contrary. There's simply nothing to controvert the fact that if she felt she was being retaliated against, she had this remedy available to her and failed to avail herself of it. With respect to the clear mandate of Illinois public policy, first of all, as a general matter, as this court knows, Illinois courts disfavor expanding the tort of retaliatory discharge. The few times it has been recognized are situations where the health, welfare, and safety of Illinois citizens is involved. For example, the Wheeler case that Mr. Miller also referred to had to do with exposure to radioactive materials. That is a far cry from what we are talking about in this case. In addition, other cases that have found this, have upheld this tort of retaliatory discharge, have done so for things where there is a clear Illinois statute or other expression that the conduct at issue is under a public policy of the state of Illinois. And I submit that Mr. Miller's argument that employment rights can constitute a sufficient basis for this public policy simply does not fall within the types of cases where this has been recognized. That is more in the nature of an economic or social regulation, which this court in Llewellyn versus Schneidig held was not sufficient to create a tort of retaliatory discharge. Ms. Aries, throughout this case, has never set forth any Illinois constitutional provision, statute, rule, regulation, or judicial decision that supports the public policy that she is encouraging the court to create in this case. With respect to Ms. Aries' job performance, the evidence submitted to the district court, first of all, this issue is properly before this court, even though the district court did not decide based on this ground, REMCOR did argue to the district court that Ms. Aries' performance was the cause of her discharge, and this court can affirm the dismissal of her retaliatory discharge claim on that ground. REMCOR submitted an avalanche of evidence to support its claim that she was terminated for poor performance. Evidence that came both before and after this issue with the Social Security cards was ever raised. The evidence also established that both before and after March of 1999, when the Social Security card issue came up, there were complaints about Ms. Aries' job performance from REMCOR's vendors, from its corporate human resources personnel in Minnesota, from rank-and-file employees, from operations supervisors, and from Ms. Aries' own direct supervisor and second-level manager. In addition, these complaints covered every aspect of her job performance, including her submission of inaccurate reports, her indifference to employee and supervisor concerns, her inattentiveness to REMCOR's insurance providers, her untimeliness and failure to complete work assignments, and her incomplete and inaccurate insurance administration, including her failure to enroll employees in insurance and to discontinue employees' insurance after they were terminated and after their COBRA expired. There are a few positive comments about Ms. Aries' performance that Mr. Miller alluded to. Those comments, however, are generally of a generic nature, having to do with her knowledge of human resources generally, her punctuality at work. She was absolutely put on notice in January of 1999 in her performance evaluation that her performance needed improvement. She walked away from her January 1999 performance meeting knowing that she needed to improve. She did not, and in August of 1999, her employment was terminated for the legitimate reason of her poor job performance. If Your Honors don't have any questions, I will simply ask that you affirm the dismissal of Ms. Aries' retaliatory discharge claim. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ms. Rich. Anything further, Mr. Miller?
With regard to the performance issues, I agree that the court can affirm on any basis, but I would say that there's so much evidence here that her performance as of January 1999 was good, or at least was not poor. The testimony of her immediate supervisor was that she was bright, she was quick, she performed well, she performed in a timely fashion. And while there were many negatives, she did get a pay increase. He also testified that not all of the problems that were raised were her fault. Human resources is a problem area, and when employees have problems, the first thing they do is call human resources. She dealt with those problems. She didn't create the problems. We are not trying to expand the tort of retaliatory discharge. We feel that we're fitting it into an area that already exists. In Remcor's brief at page 29, they recognize that Illinois courts have recognized public policy retaliatory discharge claims based on federal law and in limited circumstances, and the circumstances mentioned are the ones I mentioned earlier. Medicare, income tax, we see no reason why employment issues aren't exactly the same as those issues and should be treated the same and not treated as an expansion of the tort.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you very much.